All right, so we're now to the end of our series we've been in, Counterfeit Gods. This is another one I think that is, I didn't realize when we had planned on this series that I think it was going to hit as, well, it's not probably not a good way to describe it. It's hard, it's challenging.
Hard, that's maybe a better word.
Yeah.
I don't think people have enjoyed it.
It hits different. Again, like the digital fast, I think maybe if you're like me, many of us probably have walked out some weeks going, okay, maybe that's a bigger thing in my life than I realized. And so we've had to spend a little time working through it. But rest assured, today's it. We're going to stop talking about idols next week. Next week, we're going to Jesus. So see, it's going to be great, right? It's going to be a series called Before I Go. We're looking at the final things that Jesus said, not on the cross, but that last bit of time he was with his disciples and that prayer right before his arrest. And this will lead us up to Easter. So if you want to join with us, if you have some free time in this digital fast, read John 14 through 17. That's where we're going to be for the next several weeks. So you can join us there. Amy and I were talking this week, though, there were probably a lot of other idols we could have discussed in this series. I mean, there's a lot of things we didn't talk about. You're welcome. Things like politics, but I mean, does anybody really want to talk about politics anymore? No, we're all tired of that. Identity, pleasure, sex, youth, health, independence, and even religion were all things that have the potential to become idols. And today, though, we're going to end with one that I know may be a little controversial. Good, because I love to lean into controversy occasionally.
That's why I'm here.
That's why she's here, to mellow me out a little bit, to give the other perspective, right, Amy? We're going to talk about the idol of family. The idol of family. And you may even be asking, how is this possible? Can family be an idol?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago, even when you were just previewing what we're going to talk about in this series, you mentioned family as an idol. Yeah. And I heard murmurings from someone saying, I question that. Can family actually be an idol?
Yeah.
In-laws
can
be. I do love them.
Yes. Yeah. What do you guys think? Think about that for a moment. When you think about family, can family be an idol? Yeah, you guys with me? You guys think we can? I see some good heads shaking, yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult one to think about though, right? Because everything, at least in my experience, most of my church experience, I would have said no. In fact, family was the opposite. Family was supposed to be almost idol-like. Elevated to this position where especially the American idea of the nuclear family, you know, mom and dad, 2.5 kids, you know, that's what we strive for. That's what we are all, that's where God exists. You know, if you want to be closer to God. So singles, I'm very sorry, you know, get hitched, because there's no real relationship with Jesus until you get married. In fact, you were sharing
Lord
this
have mercy. Okay. This morning, I was telling Brent about this. Matthew and I took a little road trip this weekend, and I was asking him about this, and he's like, you know what's interesting? He became a Christian like in his early 20s, got really involved in this church, not this church, a church, and had a mentor, and he was really, you know, following God, like so excited about being a follower of Jesus. And he went to him and he said, what's up with the family thing? He's like, seems like everybody here is like really excited about God, but he's like, there's like a leveling up, it feels like, where people are like, you got to get married, you got to find your wife and have kids. And he was genuinely like, what is that? Is that a thing in the Bible that I didn't know about, where it's like you follow God and then you've got to find your spouse and you have kids? And that's like, he was genuinely like, tell me, what is this thing? And he said, even just in his own words, he was like, I was identifying the idol of family already. Like, I was picking up on it in the church environment that he was in.
Yeah, we elevate it to a status. And we just have to remember what we've been saying every week. What is an idol? An idol is anything, even the good things that we make the ultimate things, that we even deify. Those things that we put on the same level with or even above Jesus. And I do believe that sometimes, especially in our culture, American culture, this is very easy for us to do. In fact, what we have to do really is to even define some things about family. Because I think if we're not careful, one of the blessings we have here at Ashworth is we have a diverse church, which is great. As I look among the crowd today, I love the diversity. But I also know the American experience, and I know the American culture that highlights certain things. And so we need to begin with, what is family? What is family? What is it that we're even talking about? We're going to define it, and we're going to talk about even how it has been distorted. Because even when you begin to look at the American family, I did a little research this week.
The white American
family. Yeah, the white American family. The family structure. Think about what, when you think of family, and you think of that family structure, what does that look like to you? For most of us, it's my house, right? It's Brent and Carrie. Not my house for all of you guys, not seven children, but you know, now we're kind of normal. We've gotten rid of several, and so we're down to like three in the house, so, you know.
Just to clarify, they moved out. You didn't
Got rid of, you know, moved out. Either way, they're not there anymore, so,
guess.
You know.
Yeah.
But for us, it's the us, it's mom and dad, two kids. That's our existence, you know, and we do allow for, we kind of look down on, though, you know, singles, single parents. Blended families are much more common, but you know, there's this idea of what that perfect family is. Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of an American idea, because even in other cultures, what do you find in the other cultures? You probably have more experience.
Yeah,
with this,
well, right? even non-white American culture, there's lots of cultures in America where families are much larger than you, us four and no more.
Yeah.
You know, your wife and all your kids or whatever. It's more like I've got my mom living with me and my aunt lives with me and my cousins, and there's a much broader sense. And then around the world, much of the rest of the world, a family is much larger. You know, it's like you have generations living under one household, or a sense of responsibility for generations. And it does seem like there is something particular about white American culture, and then even in the church, about husband, wife, children, your nuclear family is the kind of end all be all.
And even as you look at that, because other cultures are used to having not just us four and no more, but being extended, you have, like, I was looking, the role of elders, you know. In our culture, in my culture, I'll say, what do we do with our old people? Sorry, old people, you get old, we're going to ship you off to an independent living center, or, you know, we're going to put you in a nursing home or whatever. That's what we do. And independence all the way through death is very important, you know. And it's even as you get there, it's what we desire. No, I don't want to be a burden on my children. But in many Asian, Middle Eastern societies, elders aren't treated that way. They're respected. They're cared for within the family home. And that for us probably seems like, really? I got to take care of those people? Yet this is just kind of the idea. It's not just this very small thing. It's bigger. It's broader. I mean, even child rearing practices, you know, I was looking at this, and one of the things it said is, you know, from an early age in American culture, we emphasize independence and self-reliance. But many other cultures, Asian cultures, African families, they focus on collectivism. They focus on obedience and respect for authority. And I thought, you know, what does all this mean? And it said, children are taught from an early age that you are part of something bigger than yourselves. You're part of a larger unit, this family, this community. And what you do as a child even affects the broader community. I thought, man, we certainly don't teach that, do we? We teach independence and be independent and do your own thing. And I think what's critical for us to understand as we talk about family is that it's not a monolithic idea around the world, that what we see, what we experience here isn't necessarily what other cultures are doing. And it's not necessarily the right way or the only way. We've got to acknowledge, I mean, we have a tendency, I have a tendency to be very arrogant when it comes to the way I do things. And so the way I do family is the best way to do family. And we can even look down on, or, you know, think negatively about, well, when you become as sophisticated as we are, you will become and get to the place where we are because we've got this figured out. And yet, when I look at our culture, when I look at even what's happening in families around us today, especially in our culture, can we really say, well, yeah, we've got this figured out? In fact, I think...
Is it Dr. Phil that says, how's that working for you? It's true. Look at where we are in our families today. I'm like, is it working for us?
Yeah. It's not.
For, you know, to idolize our families and have only your, you know, your nuclear family be kind of the end all be all for your community.
Yeah, and we lead with this family first mentality, this us four and no more, and it seems good and it seems right, and then we think to ourselves, what could possibly go wrong when we land here? What could possibly go wrong when we isolate our family unit individually to ourselves without thinking about the culture, broader culture around us, or the broader community around us, and we just kind of keep us isolated? What could possibly go wrong? I think we're seeing what could possibly go wrong, aren't we? I mean, I think as American culture, we've been in this phase for at least 40 to 50 years. I mean, this family first, maybe coming out of World War II, even the rise of the suburban neighborhood and privacy fences and all these things. I think this is where we've seen things land. And this idea of what the perfect family looks like and how we endorse this, or how we teach it, has been something the church has been, I would say, guilty of. For a while, we've founded ministries on it, and there are thousands of books telling you how you should do this. And the problem with this is that all these things, we make this the ultimate objective. This American nuclear family becomes it, to come before and above everything else. We look down on and maybe not say it, but we kind of think we've got it figured out. And we just kind of think this is it. But it's not, is it? Because even in our own culture, we were talking this morning with some folks, and we've created pockets of, well, Matthew's statement, I think, is probably critical to this. What do we do as singles in the room? What do we do when you say your ultimate objective is find that spouse? What do you do there?
I have a very dear friend who's single and in her mid-40s, and she was doing ministry overseas for years in Cambodia. And loved it, had such a rich experience. And then it was time for her to come back. Her family's here. Her nuclear family is here, her mom and her dad. And so she comes back to the U.S. a number of years ago. And she struggled so much. She bought a house. She did all the things she thought she should do. And I remember talking to her and walking with her in that season. We kind of became family to her here. She'd come over, and I remember her talking about how, wow, it's really hard to be a single, middle-aged woman in a non-communal culture. Mm-hmm. And she's a Christian. She's deeply connected to her faith community, and still, she was like, she literally sold her house and was like, I'm going to move back to Cambodia. She's like, it's too hard to be in a culture where everything is about the individual and about your very small family, because she's like, I can't break into any of those places, and I constantly feel like I'm an outsider. And she's like, in a communal culture, nobody's going to let me be alone. You know, I'm going to be invited. I'm going to be welcomed. I'm going to be in lots of spaces where people are going to intentionally seek me out. And here I feel more like, oh, what's wrong with her? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we lean into this idea. And I think the biggest problem with this mentality, this family first mentality, is that we buy into the idea, if we do certain things, if we believe certain ways, then everything's going to work out. You just, you know, has anybody read that book before where you follow these five steps and you will have the perfect kids? Or if you're single, you know, follow these five steps and you'll find a spouse, you know, or all this. Then what happens? Has anybody ever seen that not work out? You all don't have to raise your hands, because I think we've all been there. We're not able to follow these steps because we're all unique and we're all different. And all we've done, I think, is even within the church, is we have bought into this idea of the prosperity gospel for the family. It's not about money. It's about the prosperity of the family. Well, you do these three things and your kids will, you know, they'll be perfect and they'll have straight teeth and they'll always obey and they'll follow Jesus forever. You know, it's parents that have paid for braces understand the straight teeth comment. I mean, that's what we've done. And we hold on to it. And we hope. Yes, I'm going to follow this. And then what happens when it doesn't? We're left kind of a lot of heartburn and a lot of heartache in the process. And here's one thing I think we have to realize, and we know this, but we forget it, is that the pressure to create the perfect family is just too great a burden for anything or anyone to bear. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like this, when you get married and you have that expectation of the perfect spouse, they can't hold up to that, can they? And if you don't learn to let them out of those expectations, you're headed for a miserable marriage and divorce, because no one can stand up under that level of pressure, mm-hmm. and your family can't either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now you're speaking to me, okay? We all know that Matthew Becker is nearly the perfect spouse, but I literally, best decision I've ever made in my life, you know. Okay, but I was thinking this week, like wrestling with this, what is my idol even in the American family? How do I see this in my own life? And that is one of the ways. I'm like, oh, I can easily begin to see my spouse as God. Mm. And in, just in the way that I'm like dependent on him.
You
I'm
meet
like,
my need.
Yeah.
You
I things happen and I'm like, I run to him. You yeah. know, things I need something, he'll catch me, you know. And it's a gift. Actually, Matthew means gift from God. So cute. And it is a gift that God, there are, you know, when you have a spouse, maybe it is a gift from God. Yeah. And there are ways that God intends for you to carry each other's burdens and bear one another's burdens. But there are many times where that can become distorted. And I begin to be like, manage all my things and be my person. And when really God's like, hey, hi, I am actually God. And I listen. Run to me and tell me. And also there are times where he's like, reach out. You have needs. You don't need to just put all those on one person. You have a community around you who wants to yes. support you, who wants to love you, who wants to listen to you, who wants to step in. And there's so often when we even keeping our own needs and all those things, we put all that pressure, or I put all that pressure in my one small, tiny little circle, you mm-hmm. know? So check on Matthew after the service.
And what we love to do in church as well is we like to talk about biblical, right? And we love the Bible. It's the guide for life. It's our authority. We believe that. But even when we think about family, have you ever heard this idea of you need a biblical family? Anybody heard that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question? Which one? I mean, would you like Abraham, who tried to pass his wife off not once but twice as his sister, so she ended up in some guy's harem? That a biblical family? What about David and Bathsheba? We know that story, right? Is that a biblical family? What about Solomon? 700 wives and 300 concubines. Concubine's a great church word, right? Anybody know what that is? It's like a secondary wife. Just doesn't quite get all the privileges and benefits of a wife, just there for the man's pleasure. And now let's just figure out which man came up with this idea, because we know it wasn't a woman that thought concubine would be a great thing, you know. Which biblical family do we look at? Because more the Bible shows us more of the screwed up families than the families that have it all together. I mean, we don't see a lot even in the New Testament as far as the model for family, because Jesus called Peter to like follow him. And what about poor Peter's wife? We know he had one because his mother-in-law got sick and healed. Mm-hmm. What's that about? Doesn't really fit in our nice little box, does it? What is going on here? We've got to stop and we've got to say, what's happening with this? Now, I realize that by this point in the message I wrote down, you might be thinking, why do they hate families? We don't hate families. We don't hate families. In fact, some of us keep expanding ours for some reason. But the reality is we have to see family as a gift and not as a God. And that's a big difference. Family is a gift and not as a God. And as I look across the cultural landscape, I see families wrapped up in themselves, and I see this greater culture at large. I wonder if isolating ourselves from those only related to us by blood might not be what God had in mind, might not be the thing that God was planning for us to be. In fact, a phrase I've used for a long time is the idolization of the American family. This is not new for this message. Amy's had to hear it for a decade.
For years.
Yes. I'm wondering if the idolization of the American family is not incredibly short-sighted and miss it out on something truly great. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because let's just turn to some very difficult and challenging words that Jesus had to say on this topic. First, let's look at Matthew chapter 12. We'll just read the passage. It says, while Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you." He replied to them, "Who is my mother? And where are my brothers?" Mothers, how would you feel if your child said that about you? Feeling good? No, you're going to go in there, you're going to walk in that room, you're going to grab him by the ear, and you're going to say, "I'll show you who your mother is." Yeah. Says, pointing to his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother. Anybody surprised Jesus said that? Seems a little rude, doesn't it? Seems a little disrespectful. One commentary I read this week said, if this doesn't deeply shock you, you didn't read it right. Go back and reread it. This should shock you. And imagine what his mother and brothers probably felt hearing this in this moment.
And even, again, like you'd said earlier, we are not anti-family.
No.
But what we see here, and I think this particular moment where Jesus says, who are my mother and my brothers? The people who do the will of God are my mother. He is expanding our view of family. And I think that's so crucial. And something that I've had to go back to over and over, the expansion of my view of family. And not as there's even a part of it that's like, I need to think this way. No, it's a gift that God gives us. We have an expansion of our view of family because we're in the kingdom of God. Our family increases. Yeah. And the people who are my mother and I have lots of spiritual moms and spiritual dads, and I have lots of spiritual sisters and brothers. We even joked about, we're twinning this morning, spiritual brother and sister. Okay, we have a new view of family, and it's much bigger. Isn't that a gift?
Yeah.
But we miss out because we're so obsessed and focused on our small circle of who we should be in charge of and who we should be getting our needs met from. And we're missing out.
Yeah. And Jesus, this isn't the only place Jesus said crazy stuff either. I mean, you're right, Amy. He's expanding it. Just real quickly, Matthew 10, Jesus is making the statement. He says, "Don't suppose I've come to bring peace. I've come to bring a sword." And we think about that maybe in political conquest and colonization. Wrong. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about people who come to follow Jesus. This will be something that could split families, something that could come between a blood relation because of the desire to know and follow Jesus. It's putting Jesus as everything to us and realizing that sometimes that may even cause us to leave our blood relations behind because they're not with us in that. Or even this crazy exchange where somebody wanted to praise Mary at one point and for having such an amazing son. Luke 11, it says, as Jesus was saying some things, a woman in the crowd called out and said, "Blessed is the mother who gave you birth and nursed you." What a nice thing to say about Mary. And Jesus says, "Blessed rather are those who hear the word of God and obey it." I mean, again, if we're not getting somewhat offended by the words of Jesus, we may not be understanding exactly what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, look, I'm not saying family's not important. In fact, if you look at his ministry, the wedding at Cana, where he turns water into wine, that is an endorsement of marriage. When Jesus is dying on the cross, as he's looking out at his mother, as he's looking out at his disciple John, and what does he say to them? He says, "Mother, this is your son. Son, take care of this woman." He is making sure that his mother is going to be cared for. He's not throwing these things away. As Amy said, he's expanding them. He's broadening this. In fact, author Fleming Rutledge writes that Jesus is setting aside the blood relationship in order to create this much wider family. And so I ask the question, if that's the case, if we see baptism, the thing that brings us into the family, that identifies us with the family, being that symbol, wouldn't we begin to even believe that water is thicker than blood? That the waters of baptism are thicker than the blood? And can you feel that tension here? Can you feel that tension that exists? Good. We should. We, as the people who follow Jesus, need to feel this tension.
It makes me think of even we do child dedications. You know, we don't do that as just like a birth announcement. You know, like we're excited. And I think we do, though. I mean, I think that sometimes that's how we see it. Rather, during those times, you'll always look at us and say, okay, it's your turn.
Yeah.
Do you all agree to like help raise this child and to love them and support them and pray for them? Do you do that? And it's like, we don't mean that.
We just mean here on Sunday morning, you know?
And in our baptism, why do we do that in front of each other? It's a symbol saying, I'm ready to follow Jesus with my whole life. And I'm doing it as a community. Otherwise, we'd go do all these private baptisms. Yeah. We do it communally because that's how we're intended to follow Jesus. And not just you do it beside each other, but you do it with each other. And people, we're helping each other raise each other's kids. And we're helping raise each other spiritually. And it's part of the deal. That author used the phrase spiritual kinship. And I love that.
Yeah.
We have a spiritual kinship that we forget about.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we get in our minds this idea of what is great, and we can't think of anything greater. And I think family has become one of these things that we can't think of anything better than getting married and having kids and raising successful kids and launching them into the world. And oh, look at this. And we think this is the ultimate objective. And so when we get there, we can't imagine there's anything greater or better than that. And I think what Jesus is telling us is there is. There is something better. There is something greater. That it's beyond the us for and no more. That what he's offering to us is even better than we can imagine. I mean, we've talked before about even Jesus answers a question about marriage in heaven. And somebody's like, well, who's this woman going to be married to? They followed the custom and her husband died and she had to marry her brother-in-law and he died and had to marry another brother-in-law. There were seven brothers-in-law that she had to marry. Who's she married to in heaven? And Jesus' response, we won't be married or given to marriage in heaven. And there have been people we've dealt with in ministry that have been offended by that. And like, how is that? I love my spouse. I want to be married. And it's because we can't imagine. Our minds are too limited to think beyond the here and now to understand that what Jesus is inviting us to in marriage, what Jesus is inviting us to in family is even better, even greater than anything we could possibly imagine if we will allow ourselves to lean into it. I just think about some of the struggles in the world today. I think about the challenges that families have. I mean, we have young moms here in our church, and we see sometimes there's struggle, there's difficulty. Why social media screws us up? Because there's their Instagrammable family and what that's supposed to look like. And I think, how much easier is this supposed to be when it does take a village? It does take all of us, and to have others be able to lean into those relationships and say, I've raised a kid. I've made all the mistakes. I mean, any parent in this room say, I got it all right? Absolutely not. How many of you would be the first to say, I've made all the mistakes? That's me. And you step into these relationships and you say, you don't have to do this alone. You lean in. And isn't that the way that maybe we're being invited into this by Jesus? Go ahead.
I was just thinking, like, I've experienced this. I mean, if we were not a part of a church, we wouldn't. We would probably live a much smaller life. But our kids, like, we're talking about who does Pearl want to invite to her birthday party? And she's like, well, probably Mr. Brent, you know. Or she'll be like, I haven't seen Keegan for a while, you know. Or, like, she'll talk about the Bradys, and they give her bags to hand out to the homeless in our neighborhood. Like, this girl, her friends are, like, in their 70s. 50s, 20s, and 30s, you know,
50,
like
50. Say 50 here,
okay.
Not 70.
And what a gift. And I trust that. I trust that there's times where she rolls up into Mr. Brent's office and he's going to talk to her about something that she needs to talk about. And that she learns about social justice, and she's learning about things that she needs to learn about from other people who are doing the stuff in our church. And there's a way that her world is expanded. She eats Indian food because we have Indian friends, you know. And all of these are things that happen because of church. Yeah. And I think this is actually what the church offers us if we lean in. But so often we treat the church just like everything else, and me included, who works here. I've given my life to this. And still, I want to live in my kind of easy, convenient, small world. But if we choose to lean in, we get the benefit of like a community that raises each other, raises our kids, where we rub shoulders and we get to experience such a richer life, right? And a way richer experience with Jesus. I know Jesus more fully because I'm with people who are older and younger and different backgrounds and different colors and different experiences and different orientations, because I want to see a more fuller picture of who Jesus is. And I get to see that by all these different
And that's
folks.
Scary because other people aren't like me and we're going to rub each other the wrong way. And sometimes Amy is going to annoy me. It happens. I would never annoy her. I'm just that good. But I mean, and so we learn to live it. We avoid these structures because, well, it's easier. It's easier if I don't lean in. I don't want to have to learn what a different culture thinks. I don't want to have to learn how to eat different food. I don't want to have to learn from what other people have done. I've got this all figured out. And it's just, and so we isolate ourselves in these units and we miss what Jesus is inviting us to. And what if what we've been missing is so critically important to life? What if part of the solution to this is not thinking less of our families or thinking of our families less, but figuring out how to integrate our families into the kingdom of God, into true community with others? I mean, that's got to be part of this solution. I read a book this week called Households of Faith. The author, Emily McGowan, she writes this. She says, "Family first, then, is not a Christian principle." Rather, loyalty to Jesus and his household comes first, forming the framework within which we practice loyalty to one's household and the broader community. I was reading a story. She tells the story in the book. She talks about even in 200, the year 200, she talks about there was a wealthy Roman mother named Perpetua, killed in Carthage, in a Carthage arena, in a stadium full of people while they looked on. She'd been imprisoned for being a Christian, but she refused to renounce her faith to avoid death. Her son was still an infant, and her family was horrified that she might choose to leave her child behind. Her father comes to her and begs her, says, "Daughter, have pity on my gray head. Consider your brothers, consider your mother, your aunt, consider your son who cannot live without you. Give up your stubbornness before you destroy us all." But she refused. Though she dearly loved her family and her son, her loyalty was now to Jesus alone and his community of disciples. She'd exchanged the norms of that Roman household for that of God's household. And she said, "I cannot be called anything else than what I am, a Christian." Among the group where she was in prison, she met another, an enslaved woman named Felicitas, who was also a new mother. Her child, a girl, was born in prison, yet upon their condemnation to be killed by the beast, these two mothers rejoiced at their good fortune. It says, Perpetua reported that her body and mind submitted to this sentence with peace. She said in her journal, "God saw to it that my child no longer needed my nursing. After that, I was no longer tortured by my anxiety and about my child or by pain in my breast." She was then prepared to die for her faith, entrusting her child to God's care. Sit with that story.
It's intense, Brent.
You know I like a good intense story. What do you think about that story? Yeah, just that's a good response, Lynn.
Whew. God did that.
Yeah. But in our culture today, we almost want to look at her and say, "What a fool. How could you possibly be willing to give up your infant child for following Jesus? Is it possible that there's something greater than the idols that we have created, including the idol of family?" I realize for us, this goes against the idea of, you know, just pray this prayer and get saved. That's all you got to do. This woman, these two women, what do they model for us? There was nothing in their lives that they would let come before Jesus, up to and including their families. Are we that brave? I don't know. I don't want to answer that question. There's a quote I read this week from Russell Moore. He writes this. He said, talks about the gospel, the good news of Jesus. He says, "The gospel doesn't distinguish between pro-family and anti-family people so much as crucified and uncrucified people. A church that focuses on the family is in line with the Bible, but a church that puts families first is not. As a matter of fact, a Christianity that puts family first will soon find itself uncomfortable with Jesus." Wow. I think even in the church, we've been guilty of putting our families, making our families more important than God. And I think we're seeing tragic consequences when that happens. What are we teaching our children when everything else is more important than relationship with Jesus? I mean, and this doesn't sit from a place of, you know, I don't get to look down on you people and say, well, I did it all right. No, I think about the times where my own kids had stuff to conflict with church events, and how many times did I not lean into the community and pulled out and did other things because I wanted them not to miss out. But what did I teach? What did I model in doing that?
And I think, as you're saying that, I'm like, yes, I think putting other things before God in our families has tragic consequences. And when we actually have the foundation of Jesus and the foundation of the family of God and the expanded vision of family, we benefit. So yes, there are consequences. On the other side, when we lean into it, there is, again, I can't say it enough, there is a richness, there is a benefit in our own lives and our families. Our families benefit. Our small families benefit when we are integrated into a much wider family. And when our eyes look at each other and see brother, sister, family member, sibling, and that's how we relate to each other and connect with each other. There's endless benefit. It's harder, but I believe it's so much richer.
Absolutely, I agree. One of the commentaries I read this week said, if the church takes seriously Jesus' idea of what the family is, one of its tasks is to create and nurture families that make a place for all those who want a relationship with God as Father and with one another. This requires more than sharing a pew on Sunday morning and a fellowship donut afterward. Instead, we are to allow these persons to become our parents, our children, our siblings. We're to adopt one another and accept responsibility for and commit to one another. The church is to take those who know the hurt of the world and bring them into the healing of community acceptance. And just like we've done every week, we're going to challenge you with a practice. What is the spiritual practice this time? It's hospitality. It's community. It's expanding your circle. You know how easy this is? Oh, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. But you know how easy it is? You're going to eat anyway, right? Just bring somebody else along. You're going to have a meal? Bring somebody else along. You're making something at home tonight? Throw something out. Throw an extra half in. And then throughout the day, hey, you want to join us for dinner? That's what we're talking about. Figure out ways that we can expand the circle. When we see new moms and we see them trying to figure out what new moms and dads, we lean into those. Hey, can we go have a cup of coffee? Can we just, let me help. What can I do for you? You know, these kinds of things. When we see the older people in our congregation going through challenges, hey, can I step in? I mean, on more than one occasion, I've taken my ladder to somebody's house to change a smoke detector battery because they shouldn't have been on a ladder. Glad to do it. That's what community's about, right? That's what we're talking about. It's leaning in to just being relational with one another, not letting this right here be the only interaction we have with one another. And what's possible? We get a bigger family, and just like your real family, you're going to love them, and they're going to annoy you, but they're going to bring life and richness in a way that we never, ever thought possible. Let's pray.